With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Hello, I'm Clive Anderson. Welcome to My Seven Wonders Live. In the My Seven Wonders podcast, I ask a special guest to select and talk about the seven wonders of his or her world. This episode is one of several we recorded in front of a live audience at the 2022 Edinburgh Festival Fringe. And the guest who joined me for this recording is an extremely popular comedian on stage and on television. He's been appearing at the Edinburgh Festival for 20 years. His latest stand-up tour is called It's Best You Hear It From Me. So here we are with an enthusiastic Edinburgh Fringe audience exploring the seven wonders of Hal Cruttendon.
Hello, Hal.
Thank you.
I do hate that thing of being the surprise guest, because you do know you walk up and people, I don't know who he is. And well, so it's that bloke from Holmes Under the Hammer. That's usually what people... Shut up. But
we'll know who you are by the end of this discussion. So,
yes.
So we, actually, just to be fair to you and to just clear things up, so tell us where your show is on and where people can go and sit. Won't have many more performances.
No, it's only got two more, and I don't know. I think it's quite well sold for these last two.
Don't put them off.
Oh, yeah, try. Please, yeah. Sunday particularly will be crap. Yeah. And then on tour.
Yes.
If anybody's from other parts of the country.
Well, people
on tour
listening
from September.
On this podcast.
Oh, yes, people listening on the podcast. Yes.
What's it called? What's the show called?
It's called It's Best You Hear It From Me.
Yes.
Which I'm not that proud of as a title. It's not my favourite title, but it is my favourite show.
Oh, right.
Because I wanted to call it Hal Cruttendon Can Dish It Out But Can't Take It. And that apparently is too long a title. It is brilliant, though. It's about my divorce, so it's about making sad things happy.
Yes.
Hopefully.
It's quite brave of you to, because you're recently divorced.
Well,
We're still divorcing.
Oh, we're still in the house.
Yes.
So I know. We've been in the house. I know, we're very grown up, aren't we? And we're quite skint as well, and we just want to sell the house before we get out. But, it's been absolutely fine. It's with some tensions. I have to look after my wife and make sure I'm not too horrible. But it does...
Make her the butt of your jokes in your show.
And also, everybody's on my side because she's leaving me, which is always like a massive, brilliant thumbs up for the show. Do you know what I mean? Because you go, oh, poor bloke, and not really think about it. Obviously, it's 50-50.
Well, I mean, I don't want to be a sort of counselling service or even offer advice, but... the person who occupied this seat several years ago now, few days ago, was John Bishop. And he's got a story of he was in the process of getting divorced and then his wife happened to see him performing and they sort of re-fell in love with each other. And this is years ago, they're back together. So maybe we just need to make sure, maybe here or on tour,
The thing is, it's been really good for my career for new material. It has! might have been one of the reasons we're breaking up, is I am a bit work obsessed. I said this thing about, there was one time, but I said this during the show, I have a memory of one time my wife sitting and saying, you know, I never see you, you're always working. And it was always, you know, I could never forget that moment because she was in the fourth row, Leicester Square Theatre. I was on stage. It's meant to be
the most personalised heckle has ever
been. Exactly. No, I don't. My wife was never that big a fan, which I like. The fact that she wasn't. So, you know, I'd be doing a show here. Everybody would have seen my show. My wife would have seen it halfway through the tour. Go, okay, I'll come and see it.
Yes.
So I probably should have got a hint from that, shouldn't I? That things were...
Pretend to be shocked about that, but I have a fairly similar experience.
Oh, really?
Yes.
Well, but great divorces are the thing, and it will be good for material if your marriage breaks up too.
No, I don't want to go that far, but
that's another thing I do in my show. If you are about to break up, I try and break people up. So if you think... And there will be people here silently going, I am trying to find the right moment.
Yes.
Come and see the show.
Yeah. No, that would be good after. I've seen your show and I enjoyed it a lot, but that would be, off the show. Say, so they got divorced after, 20 years marriage?
Yeah, 22 years.
Long time. we've been married 20 years. What about it?
Exactly. It's the growth area of divorce.
All right.
I think because I'm alone now, I want everybody to be alone. So that's my mission. Do you know what my youngest daughter was saying to me? She's 20. And she said, I'm 52. And she said, don't now start dating young women. And I went, well, how young am I allowed? She said, don't date people in their 20s. I went, God, I wouldn't do that. I said, what age am I allowed? And she went, 35. And I went, that's a massive result.
Yes.
That's brilliant. Yeah. I mean, I'm not a fan of big age gaps, but 35.
35. So if there are any 35-year-old women in the audience...
I'm so desperate. It's so wrong of me, isn't it? To be literally go to the audience, yes, please, no, don't, honestly. Yeah. It's too soon. It's too raw.
Yeah. Now,
I just need to be held. No, I've got to stop. Be doing this. It's too desperate. I think I reek of the desperation.
Now, the only one thing I'll ask you about your act, because at the beginning of your act, apart from you mentioned the divorce and stuff, you do say, look, I'm not as nice as people think I am. I'm edgier. Not. I'm a harder comedian. I want to be... But now, most performers are desperately liked. However, not Jerry Sadovitz necessarily, but everybody else, however harsh they're being, there's an element. But you're going in the opposite direction. You're too much liked, and you want to be regarded as a bit more vicious.
I know, it's pathetic. This is bad, isn't it? I'm digging a hole for myself, going, because I just don't like the fact that I'm seen as cosy, cuddly, round-faced comedian. As I said in the show, Pound Shop Michael McIntyre. It's kind of a cheap one, doesn't cost as much to see, and plays much smaller theatres.
Not but a Pound Shop. You're at least a fiver.
I'm not saying it's rubbish to be like Michael McIntyre. He is brilliant at what he does, but I think I'm just that nice, cuddly, everything's a bit of a laugh, and my life's hysterical, and everything's funny that happens to me. I don't like that image because it's not true. I'm quite an unpleasant person. Push me, see what happens. No, but
and you had a bit of a contretemps with somebody earlier than over politics, which you don't do a lot of, but you did enough to annoy a member of the audience.
As I say, I do a little tiny bit of politics in my show, and I have a line in my show about this, because I think we're so tribal now, it's so silly to do too much politics if an audience hasn't come to see you for that, because... people just don't like hearing different opinions anymore. We're all terrible at it. We've all got worse. I think Twitter's made us worse.
Yeah.
And so I say I do a little tiny bit. I do if you are somebody that voted for Brexit or is responsible for what still lives in number 10 at the moment, that I might do a little bit. It's 3 or 4 minutes of discomfort during my show. It's nothing compared to the rage I feel every day at what you've done to my country. So and that's all I do, is little bits like that. But I'd explain that. And then this guy, I started having a few jokes at Boris Johnson's expense, and he just went mad and ended up the whole crowd shouting at him, going, waving at him to go, and he's giving them the finger from the back and screaming abuse, and it was all being live streamed on Next Up Comedy, and apparently I trended on something.
I trended
on Twitter for a bit, and if he'd hit me, I wouldn't be doing this. I'd be through the roof. I mean, not saying this is crap. I'd have been whisked off, and my tour would have sold out because I'd be that edgy guy that got punched alive, and it would have gone viral. And I was that close to my career taking off and being seriously injured.
That's a nice bit of viciousness coming out. That I wouldn't be doing this.
Exactly.
That's a good point. Let's get on to your wonders. Let's get on with your wonders then.
It's all gotten horrible, hasn't it?
So now you've got an interesting collection of wonders, if I may say so, because I've done quite a few now, and some are kind of, some people's wonders are quite predictable, some are not, some is a mixture. Yours is very much a mixture. The first one I wasn't expecting from you, your wonder of the world, professional rugby players.
Yes.
Now, which word were you concentrating on there? The professional aspect? It's rugby you're obsessed with? Is it the players you like the look of?
I am pretty rugby obsessed. That is sort of my midlife crisis.
Oh, right.
I'm a fan of a very unpopular rugby club because they broke the salary cap. I'm a Saracens fan, North London, and everybody hates. Yeah.
Oh, there's another Saracens fan.
They're brilliant. They follow me.
So they cheated, did they? Is that what
they cheated the salary cap, and then, but they've done a lot of time for it. They went and got sent down into a lower division, and they came straight back up, and they kept a lot of these players because basically they're quite loyal players who, you know, were staying. They're obviously on much reduced wages and things like that on the deal. I don't really understand. I don't, because we were so in the wrong, I don't like to look at the details of what happened. But But I mean, honestly, with the divorce happening and things, I have some weekends where I am both days rugby. I've watched the men's team on Saturday and the women's team on Sunday, because the women's team are brilliant as well, it sounds.
Yes.
Well, you
have to go out of the house or something, or you just want to avoid your wife?
It's just the fact that I don't have to have guilt about going, I'm out all weekend, I'm watching rugby on this day and that day.
Oh, right, you're liberated from having responsibilities.
I'm liberated. It is brilliant.
Making a good case for divorce here.
Everybody join me. It's so wonderfully selfish, yes, that you can just go, I don't have to have that worry of going, I've been working all week, because my wife really doesn't want to see me. Do you know what I mean? So I don't...
Well, she's made that very plain.
She's made that very clear. Yeah. So I've just got quite obsessed with Sarries, and I just... I'm pathetic. These players are half my age, and yes, I meet them, and I'm just in awe of them, because they're just... Rugby is at such a level now. I mean, I played when I was a kid, and I could make... I mean, luckily, I had quite severe knee problems. I've had knee operations in my teens and stuff. Right. And that luckily got me out of the fact that I wasn't very good.
What sort of position... I know enough about rugby to know that I played it at school, because we had to.
Yeah.
Were you a prop forward or a wing three quarter?
I was quite a big scrum half, because even though I'm not tall, but for a scrum half at the time, I was scrum half.
And you must have been quite skillful. It's a skillful position, isn't it?
Rugby fans in, this isn't of interest to most people here, but John Dawes, who died, I think, this year, didn't he? And he was captain of the British and Irish Lions in 1971, and he Welsh player. I used to play at London Welsh, not because I was Welsh. Virtually the whole team was Welsh, apart from me, but I lived in very near the ground in West London. And he saw me at 13 and said to my dad, that's the best pass I've ever seen in a kid that age, a best scrum half pass. But that's all I could do. I was rubbish tackler. I was mainly a good passer because I was getting rid of the bloody ball to make sure no one hit me. So I did have one of our coaches was Neil Kinnock, who was head of the Labour Party at the time, and his son Steve, now MP for Aberavon, he was my fly half. I'm a terrible name dropper. Have I told you that? No one's that. No, okay.
No, that's good. It's getting name dropping into rugby is good. So you did drop a name of a rugby player. It didn't mean much to me, but I've heard of Neil Kinnock and indeed his son. So that's good. Now the other thing I'll just say is that professional, the fact that rugby's gone professional has, to my mind, it's brought in line with all the other sports that are professional, is that everyone beefs up, they're twice as big as they used to be.
Even tiny wingers, even players who look normal are incredibly powerful.
There's
a player at Sarries who plays for Wales, Nick Tompkins. And this is so pathetic. This is so fanboyish or whatever. Yeah. But I went up and went, brilliant game. I was in an area where the players were, because I do things for the club as well. And I just touched his arm and went, you know, I didn't say it. I didn't go, you've got a very strong arm, Nick. But even he looks like a normal bloke. And they're all so built now. And in the amateur days, there was still skinny little wingers who could get crushed.
There was a range of sizes.
Everybody is that nightmare of fast, powerful... And I just am so pleased I got out of it.
And they thump into it. The tactic is to thump into each other more than to try and avoid each other, which is...
It's different. It has got such immense skill while also such immense... But it's that thing of... You look at someone like Owen Farrell, who it's the little pass and then you get hammered. Or Finn Russell, who's a great Scottish player. And they do it, don't they? But they're just
the crowd on side now.
They're just so brave. It's good to talk rugby because Scotland keep beating England every time you play them. But you have absolute, like football, no consistency at all. Then you go and lose in Argentina. Do you know what I mean? But well done, because you beat us. Sorry, I've got to stop bringing nasties. I hate being English as well, don't you?
Well, I always beef up my Scottishness when I'm in this country. But it's just slightly spurious, but it gets me through. Better than sitting talking like you about England.
I know. But it is that thing of there is so. Rugby is such a perfect combination of brutality and immense skill and beauty. So I, you know, and well, I maybe they're the sons I never had. Those players, as they run out, I just go, love them.
Now is the time to have more sons with a new 35-year-old
woman
you're going to be with.
I hope she's got money.
I was just trying to push back on the professional, because I think even athletics now is these people now, they do, you know, like a javelin throw or something. They're professional. They spend all day, every day training to do, you know, and it's a hard, you know, throw, but it seems an odd thing to be making your living from. But then so does standing up doing, telling jokes, doesn't it?
Would you prefer the days of the amateur? Are you sort of old school kind of...
Well, I was thinking about this, or I occasionally think, do you remember... you're too young to remember the Chariots of Fire.
Yes.
Because then
John Gielgud, conversation with him going the way of the amateur. I was thinking of it exactly.
Yes. Yeah. Well, in the sort of message of the film is that, come on, let's step forward and you should be allowed to have a trainer and compete properly. But yeah. I think the message is slightly wrong, is that it was slightly better when there was a little bit amateur. Even, soccer, football, 20, 30 years ago, they used to go out for a drink after the game and not sometimes before the game, and they had steak and chips, on before. And now it's all been revolutionised, so everybody's super fit. And the standard's obviously better, but it means they are, but they're paid millions of pounds. It's separating sport from real life and having any connection with it. But maybe
it makes the absolute best it can be, though. Yeah. It's so much better.
Yes.
It was. I remember rugby. My first rugby international, I was five.
Yeah.
It was England-Scotland, actually, at Twickenham. And that was the age of really boring games, loads of mistakes.
Yes.
You did have, players would drop a ball when there was no pressure on them or anything the whole time. And the level is so much better. I don't know. Purist. I think it should be the best it should be.
And can you see what's going on in a rugby game? Can you work out, or do you have to wait, like everybody else, for the referee to tell you that it's a penalty? Oh, is it?
Yeah.
Something's happened in the middle of the pitch.
You just sit there. Well, everybody's so one-eyed, aren't they?
Yeah.
Everybody is so one-eyed and so like, oh, ref, you're a disgrace. Yeah. And I always find that hysterical.
Mm.
I always find the one-eyed thing. I must admit, Murrayfield. Who goes to Murrayfield to see internationals? You are you are one of the most unpleasant crowds to be the away. I just said there was I did a terrible thing. I was at Murrayfield last time. I'm not a big lover of our national anthem, but they said, and now the English national anthem, they sung God Save the Queen, and they all booed behind us, and I went, sod it, let's sing it to them.
Yeah.
And I turned round and sung it to the crowd. I know.
Yeah.
I'd had three pints before the game, and it was unbelievable.
Yeah.
So I nearly got beaten up then. Could have gone viral, could have made my career.
Yes. Okay. But, well, I think we get somebody to come out of the crowd here today. And
I've started riling people up.
Okay.
I?
Look, I'm not making much progress through these wonders. So we're going to. So number two, less controversial, less problematic. Dogs. So wonders of the world.
Yeah.
Dogs. Yes.
So it's all doggies.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean,
so is this dogs in general, or are you thinking about your dogs in particular?
I am sort of thinking of my dogs in particular because I miss them so much.
Right.
And my little one, I have two dogs. I have a German Shorthead Pointer crossed with a Vishla called Lexi, who's quite big and troublesome but lovely. And I have a little cockapoo called Bear. And Bear is, ever since I got very ill with COVID when it first started, and Bear, ever since then, has been devoted to me.
Yes.
And my daughter keeps sending me pictures of him just looking really sad, and they say he's not right.
Yeah, he's...
And it's kind of going to... I can't wait for
he's
that.
Pining.
Arriving, yeah, pining. The arriving home. And he pees on me. But that's his... He only pees on me. He gets so excited when I... If I have been away...
You're taking
for
that as
a week,
sign of affection,
it really
are you,
is. It isn't a comment. Yeah. He literally runs up and goes... And puts his, and jumps up at me and then goes... and he just... and he only does... So I've got to kind of prepare myself with waterproofs when I get home. It is the special Bear welcome. But I miss them so much. Because they just... Also, he's a... I mean, cockapoos particularly are very emotional dogs.
Are they?
Yeah. I think so. I really... There are times when I just notice I'm feeling sad, and then you notice something beside you.
Yes.
And he just comes up and sits beside you. My other one, Lexi, just leans on me. She does that, just leaning. But I know it's really sad to love dogs too much.
Because
something... I know there is... There is part of me that thinks maybe I prefer dogs to people, and that's...
Yeah.
It's quite nasty. Quite right-wing people seem to be like that, don't they? Don't really like people, but quite like dogs. It's a bit sort of...
I wouldn't introduce politics into this particular
thing.
I think people of all sorts. But I mean, there is some argument that middle-aged men like dogs because they can shout at dogs either to bring them back or because they've done something wrong, and the dogs don't mind. Whereas if you do it to your
powerful
wife or your children, they
leave.
They
divorce you.
You just can't do it anymore. Can you? We've lost the right to do that.
Yeah.
But they asked, and I think there's a thing about this week, but some experiment to show that dogs cry real tears when they're being empathetic towards you. Or when you come back and all that.
No,
sort of
I've
thing.
Never seen that. That's really annoying. He hasn't done that.
It's better than peeing on you, isn't it?
Do that. It's just me that gets peed on. It's so special.
Yes.
Nobody else is excitable enough for him to pee, just lose control and pee himself.
Well, you're pushing an open door. I'm a big fan of dogs, and they've been with us for 15,000 years. first, you know, animals. But not everybody likes dogs. Other people will be going, oh, God, they're horrible things that squirt poo all over the pavements and bark and are very irritating, or they're frightened of dogs. So
some people are so, but they're so ready to attack you. I was with Lexi walking around late at night, and she stopped and had a pee, and a guy, it was right by this guy's front, the entrance to his house, and he went by his gate, and he went, and I went, and she was just having a pee, but she's squatting, so then I go off, and he goes, "You're just gonna leave that? And I went, "She's having a pee." And I went, "Oh, sorry, sorry." I was so out of control, I didn't know how to say it. I went, "She's a woman dog." And I didn't sort of, but do you know what I mean? I was so angry, that sort of looking. They're always looking for dog owners that don't pick up dog poo and things like that. And loads of us do.
Yeah.
And we're really good about it.
I know.
I just find people, they're just angry because they know that we're experiencing a love they could never know.
I had a dog.
That sounds creepy now, doesn't it?
I had a dog for a while who was, he was okay from that point of view, but he was very much a one-man dog and I was the one man. But he was a West Highland White, if you know the breed.
Oh,
they look cute, but they're quite feisty.
Yes.
So I'm afraid he did occasionally defend himself against attack from like a small child coming towards him. And there did come a time when I'm afraid he had to go. He was a bag of bones, nothing left. Took him to the vet. And he said, "Well, we'll just give him a little, you know, injection to sedate him." I said, "Well, just be careful with that." And so he gave him a little injection to sedate him, and it just perked him up enough so he bit the vet as he was being put down. And he couldn't help.
That's lovely.
Inwardly cheering.
Yeah. To go down fighting.
Yes,
My mum used to have a Westie called Ken years ago.
Yeah.
And he used to do a thing of being very sharp, going past a big dog and being pathetic. As soon as there was a distance away, then he'd attack them. Oh. Then he'd make a big, come on. It's like a football fan, you know, that has that distance going, bring it, but they don't want to get too close.
No, my Westie was, maybe I'm fair to say, but it's like a drunk in a Glasgow pub. If there was any trouble, he went towards it. And he dealt with it. He never was overwhelmed by any other animal, whatever size. Quite extraordinary. Brilliant. Or small child, unfortunately. But there it is. This is my dog rather than yours. Let's go to your next wonder, which is the United States of America.
Yes.
Interesting one.
Well, it's my need to deliberately say things that are unpopular.
All right.
I know if I was Scottish, I would love the English. I know I would, because I want to take the unpopular side always. And I find everybody's horrible about the USA, and I'm obsessed with it. I love it. It's somehow better than us in everything is more extreme. They have the best universities, and they also have the most stupid people in the world.
Yes.
They have, don't they? They have. Yeah. We had Boris Johnson. They Trump.
Yeah.
Trump. They have unbelievable stupidity. We have Nadine Dorris. They have Marjorie Taylor Greene. A complete fascist.
Yeah.
You know, they seem to. It's just that excessive nature of America I just love, and I don't know if it's just my generation. We grew up with parents that loved America from the 60s and stuff, but it's the only place I'm excited to go.
All right.
Obviously, apart from Edinburgh, I love coming here.
But have you performed in America?
No. And that's the one place
but
I can't
not?
Get a gig.
Why?
Well, because comics go over there. It's like being a jazz musician, being a stand-up. If you're a jazz musician, you go to America. There's not a lot of work. There's a lot of jazz musicians.
Yes.
There's a lot of American stand-ups. There's a lot of comics who tell you they've gone to America. And what they do, they go and they fly to New York and they go and play Gotham or what they call Catch a Rising Star, these clubs. And then they claim back the expenses on the whole trip, saying it was a work trip.
Yeah.
When actually they got an open spot at an American club or in the improv or whatever. And I just think there's no point in that. I'm not particularly... I don't think I'd do that well in America. I'm not sure, because I think, because I'm getting more cutting, I think they might take it quite seriously. I think an English accent saying horrible things is funnier when people... I don't know, I don't think they...
I would say your demeanour and your accent and your style could go down very well.
And I could get laid, couldn't I?
Yeah.
Sorry, I'm bringing it back to that again, hi. I'm like a fat Hugh Grant.
Yeah.
But
I think
you need
a couple of cold showers.
Yes, I'm on heat, aren't I?
In America, you're a marketable commodity. I speak as somebody who knows how to promote people, which I don't.
But have you done America?
We used to do Whose Line Is It Anyway on the telly, and we did some recordings there in New York and in Los Angeles in preparation for an American version being made, where I was a sort of a non-person. You meet all the executives there. Oh, I'm Clive. I present the British version of that. all right, and because they'd moved on. But and I've done the Montreal thing, and I've done some stand up there as part of that. But it's in a very minor way. And I've done award ceremonies in New York and things.
Yeah,
and they love a bit of Britishness.
Well, I've done really well in Canada. I did Montreal. I've done a tour across Canada with a group. But I just the America thing. It is a different. I think you have to start again, don't you? And it's that thing of also I've always had a family. I think you have to go there.
Yeah, well, you haven't got one anymore. So
I've not lost my daughters. They're more on my side actually.
Well, we have a love hate relationship with America, don't we? There's a famous graffiti which is "Go home, Yankee, and take me with you."
Yeah,
it's a sort of a objecting, riling against their power in the world, but thinking, oh, what a great place to.
Because deep down, isn't it? Deep down, that we are a bit jealous. I mean, but I think I know those people think they're not. But I keep having this conversation with people going, I'd rather be an American.
Right.
It's like being a Roman at the time of Rome. It does feel still, even though I know it's a declining power, but it's still the only military and economic superpower in the world. It still is where things matter.
Yes.
It still is dominating everything. And it's not just like a power thing. It's cultural. It's that cultural power. We still love Hollywood. We still love their movies. We pretend we hate them, but we sort of need them. Are there any Americans in?
No, they've all gone home. They've all left now.
They've all left. Yeah.
I was once in America when I was being interviewed by quite a well-known actor, comedian, and we were talking about stand-up. And he said, well, the thing is, I only see stand-up comedy as an American thing. It's just so American. Other people, I said, well, that's ridiculous. You could have been saying in 1962, you know, rock music is an entirely American thing. I can never see, you know, British or other people coming out. And then he'd been swept away. And loads of comedians have gone.
Yeah, but we wouldn't have rock and roll without America, without Elvis.
I know, it doesn't have to be America. You can also be...
But do you know the rhythm of a joke? There was a documentary on this. The rhythm of a joke comes from... They think Jewish comedians in the Catskills, they actually think the way stand-ups talk is an American invention now.
Yeah.
So I just think we should.
Or
just,
a Jewish invention.
Yeah.
So what do you think people make of you when they see you performing? Do they get a firm idea of what you're really like, or do you have a.
Yes, because I think you're more honest when you're performing, when you're on stage. I'm much. People in the audience that I will talk to, I will dissect their relationship in a way that you wouldn't go up to someone in a bar and go, let me just tell you about your marriage and why it's not going to work.
Yeah.
But on stage, you've got a mic,
you've got a
thing, haven't you? And you can make those jokes. You can make jokes about people's appearances if it's a man of a certain age who goes, "Yeah, that's fine because socially it's acceptable."
Yeah. You know, you don't pick on women in the front row.
Well, just don't, do you?
No.
Even though in a fair society we should be able to.
Yes. Okay. Don't be warned. Okay. Right. Fighting back on behalf of the patriarchy. Now, I've got to go on to your next wonder, which is any medical professional.
And I say this slightly to suck up to you, because I know your wife's a doctor, and I just think... Do you know, I keep knowing people that are having procedures for, you know, fear of bowel cancer and things like that, and it just had... I had about three people in a row that had these checks happen, and there's literally people... And the nicest people they've met were the people that put the camera up their bum to go into their thing, and they say they're apparently the most delightful people.
Yeah.
And that... I just think, and that's all they're doing all day, is saying hello and being all night and putting a camera up.
They're the nicest cameramen you'll ever meet.
Exactly, the ones in TV are horrible.
Yeah, yeah.
But
wouldn't want any of them.
No,
poking their camera because they're quite big TV cameras.
But that could do some damage. Yeah.
Yes.
But I don't know how. I mean, they just say that it's one of the nicest things. Like, and just that embarrassed. I just think, who would ever go into that career?
Yeah.
Who would ever be? I wanted both my daughters to be doctors.
Yes.
And then both doing degrees in fine art, because they really listened to me.
Yeah.
But that the thing of. And they said, well, why should we be doctors? I said, because I like it. I like to be at dinner parties, which I don't really get invited to. But I'd like to be at dinner parties going, my daughter's a doctor, and have that thing. She said, but you won't do it. I said, no way would I be a doctor. I'm just amazed by anybody wanting to go into that career. I know it's interesting, but it's all the... It's, you know, the places we shy away from. You see a horrible old person's body, and you... to be horrible, but and all of our bodies, and you go,
I look at the mirror every morning, so I'm familiar with the sight of a horrible old person's body.
But it is.
They're doing standing behind me, I don't know, but they're...
but it's like the thing of people talk about police and fire brigade and ambulance people. They run towards danger. Doctors run towards the horror that is the body. And I'm just really impressed by that. I think it's just like that they go and investigate where we don't want to look, and all that sort of stuff. I just find fascinating.
Yeah, well, you're right about it. I've got three children grown up, and since my wife is a doctor, we assumed, and I used to be a lawyer, we assumed they'd have sensible jobs.
Yeah.
Ideally a doctor, but none of them have gone anywhere near it.
Because
they see how hard she works, and they see me strolling around doing hardly anything all day. It's they're not as impressed, but because you do a long day as a doctor, and then they bung in an extra meeting sort of an hour beforehand.
Yeah.
So instead of starting at 9, you start at 8 or 7, and it's responsible work. Anyway, so this is, and you sound as though you had a bit of a nasty term with COVID, so did you have to have medical help there?
I had to speak to a doctor. I thought I was going to be in hospital, and I spoke to a doctor who, this might be another reason my wife left me a year or so afterwards. She had to get up every 2 hours in the night to check on me, because this doctor went, could your wife, talking to me, and going, but I think your wife should be checking on you every 2 hours. And I went, darling, I have news. So she had to wake up and take the temperature and check throughout the night.
God.
It was lovely. She's very kind.
But thank God she was still around for that
yes.
period of time. Otherwise, because these 35-year-olds aren't going to be as keen on doing that.
Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. United Healthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Now, here's another one that I might divide the room. Your next one is politicians.
Yes.
Politicians. Now, normally they're the butt of our anger or our jokes or our annoyance. We put all the blame on politicians, but...
It's another thing. I go crazy. I'm a horrible ranter on Twitter because I just find such fury at the world. And, of course, I think it's that self-belief.
Yeah.
Where does that come from?
Yeah.
That self-belief. Just how can Liz Truss ever think that she should be Prime Minister? And it's astonishing to look at that. And some of the people in politics now, and they say the standard of politicians is going downhill. Yeah. But you look at them and go, the belief that... I mean, again, back to America, Donald Trump believing that you could be... even Joe Biden believing, surely it's time to hang your slippers up and go, you're too old. And yet these... I find their drive so impressive.
Yeah.
These people believe that they are needed and necessary and they're the person for the job. Because I go... I find their belief amazing. Yeah. And I do think our lack of respect for politicians has slightly created this crisis because we don't, you know, I know they've had a pay rise and we moan every time they get a pay rise, but because they don't get a pay rise, it puts off some people from poorer backgrounds who are high achievers who go, well, why should I go and not earn that much? And so the rich kids come in and go, we don't need the money. And so the place is... I just think our lack of respect for politicians has given us politicians we don't respect.
Yes.
There's almost a self-fulfilling prophecy that we go, yeah, they're rubbish, so we let this rubbish take a job that I think is a job that does have... can have dignity to it, should have respect, because they work their asses off.
Yeah.
They are working so hard. People don't think about the constituency work they do. The fact if you're a minister, you're on call 7 days a week. So I taking the unpopular opinion and going, it's an incredibly hard job. And the hatred that they get now online. So I'm just...
arguing this nicely, but does that make them a wonder of the world? Of all the possible things in the...
It's like the doctor thing. How could anyone go into that? It's such an appalling job to do. And as a comedian now, you go, we know we're poking fun of it. I wouldn't go into it. And God, Zelensky is a comedian who's gone into it.
Yes.
And he actually probably is the right sort of character to do it. Because if I was a comedian and became Prime Minister, and I was Prime Minister of Ukraine, I would not be there when Russia invaded. I'd be in America going, go for it, guys, you know.
Well...
I'd be sending videos home.
Well, he's somebody, I don't know how he was regarded before this crisis, but now that when the crisis hit, he just took all the right decisions, the brave decisions, and he's fought it. So that's, you know, that doesn't happen to many people... be put on the spot like that. But other than him, are there specific politicians you'd say he or she is an example of, yes, a shining light?
Well, you know, as soon as I say something, everybody's going to start getting angry.
Yeah.
And this, again, comes back to my problems with being very alone and desperate. I'm slightly in love with Yvette Cooper.
Oh, right. She is married, you know.
I know, but also I know a comic called Susan Murray. I was doing a show with Aisha Hazarika. Susan Murray, who's a comic in London, is in love with Ed Balls, and we want to break them up.
Oh, I see. Yes.
And I want Yvette Cooper to become Prime Minister, and I'll be like her, the husband of the Prime Minister. It's a little dream.
Yeah.
And I've shared it twice now on podcasts.
Yeah. Which, do you think the message is going to get to her?
I'm hoping. Yeah, Aisha knows her. Do you know her?
I've done things with Aisha. Yeah.
No, but do you know Yvette Cooper?
Oh, Yvette Cooper. No.
Does anyone know Yvette? No, but I think she is an incredibly competent politician. She's just very, very good. And I think there are some really, you know, people like Andy Burnham. I mean, I'm a bit Labour biased, so I suppose I'd, who amongst the Tories? That Ben Wallace guy everybody liked seemed to come across very well, doesn't he?
Well, he had a good sort of month or two because he was handling the defence. And they said, oh, he could be Prime Minister then.
Yeah.
Without anyone knowing anything about
because
him.
Because anybody who seems like they have some sort of authority. Yeah. But you,
is this an old person's thing? I mean, I'm reluctant to include you in my general age, but we all think the people we're around at the moment aren't any good, and we look back nostalgically to some greater day. Is it the fact that things have got worse, or were there people, I know, when Gladstone and Disraeli are around, they'd be saying, oh, these are rubbish people, the Flash Harry, Disraeli, and Gladstone wouldn't trust, and no one ever thinks they're people. And then when they're out of office, someone like John Major now comes across as a very distinguished
John
statesman.
Major's
but
lovely.
At the time, no one thought that of him.
Yeah, but I didn't think we thought he was morally appalling. And I think that about Boris Johnson. I think that a little bit about Liz Truss. I don't think there's a moral backbone there. I hated Mrs. Thatcher. I still think Mrs. Thatcher was a moral being.
Yes.
And I still think most politicians, when I was growing up, you just had that fit. Maybe it's because loads of them had fought in a Second World War and stuff like that. There was like the Dennis Healy figures. There was Tony Benn. There were people who'd been through things that were really had given them. There was a sort of respect And a sort of balance that they didn't take things too far. I think there were more friendships across the house and things like that. I think, I don't know, I'm talking off the top of my head here, I might be talking rubbish, but I just feel that I think to have a character of Boris Johnson's, you know, a moral vacuum like Boris Johnson, who became Prime Minister, is so disgusting.
Yes.
That somebody who you knew exactly what he was, you knew he was a barefaced liar, you knew he stands in Parliament and just tells lies, and because of the rules of saying he's a right honourable gentleman, you can't call him a liar, and all the... Yeah. I just think that's really embarrassing. It's a political speech now.
But in the course of what you've been saying about politics, you've rattled through several people. So Boris Johnson is an extraordinary guy. Donald Trump, even more bizarre, as you said. American presidents seem to be getting older and older. Our politicians on this side of the Atlantic seem to get younger and younger with less and less experience.
Yeah.
And less. It's almost impossible to work out why this is, why we end up with these inexperienced people who are... I mean, Tony Blair did well under the pressure when he... Again, a controversial figure now, but he won several elections and he didn't look like he was going to be as strong as he was, and he's turned. And again, he comes on and does wise speaking after the event.
He's weird because I say, moral people were more moral. Then you look at him and go, how? Because with him, it wasn't I do believe Iraq might have been an honest mistake, desperate to stay with America. It's the response afterwards. If he'd resigned in 2003 and gone, that was a terrible mistake.
Yeah.
But we did try and justify it by going, I can't regret removing Saddam from power. And then going on to make millions as an ex-Labour Prime Minister, going on and doing speaking tours and making huge business deals. Well, you don't see Gordon Brown doing that.
No.
So he has become a bit of a...
Yes, Gordon Brown was unlucky. If he'd have become Prime Minister a few years before he did. Even so, he piloted the country through the financial crisis.
Exactly. And then got blamed for it as they went, it's Labour's mess, we're clearing up. It was a worldwide economic meltdown. But I hope now we do say the Tories, we're clearing up the Tories' mess and say that COVID was somehow their fault. You know, I think that's just that blatant lie. George Osborne pushing that lie of Labour's recession.
Yeah.
They know what they're bright enough to know that.
He was a schoolmate of yours, wasn't he?
I particularly hate him because he was below me at school and already has had the high point of his career.
Yeah.
He's been
Chancellor of the Exchequer, but also about 9 other jobs he's had.
He's done really well.
Editing the Evening Standard in London.
Oh, my school was full of high achievers and me. That was like my...
Quite a forceful school, St Paul's, isn't it?
It's got some people that really... I mean, I was very good mates with James Harding, who became... the youngest ever editor of the Times. I fell out with him over a girl.
Yes.
I'm bringing my sex life into this too much, but this when we were like 15 or 16, if I'd stayed friends with him, I could have been in. I could have become a journalist and been really immoral.
Where do you want to go with your career? You're a well-established stand-up comedian, and you appear on all those sort of panel shows, and you stand up on television as well.
Yeah.
But what about the acting? Your sister's an actress,
yes,
isn't she?
Yes.
So would you? Was she married to Sean Bean?
She was married. No one's ever asked me about
Sean
this.
Sean Bean was your brother-in-law.
I told you I was a name dropper. I didn't bring it up. I've never spoken about this. Yeah, she was. She was.
Did you have Christmases sort of together?
What was she? She was
Catherine
Pass me
the turkey.
Or something.
I'm going to chop its legs off.
No.
That's my Sean Bean impression. I
that is very good.
Yeah, no. More like a baked bean, but there it is. That's okay.
No, they were only married about 3 years. And my niece Evie is his daughter.
Okay.
Who is I think she was his third wife, and now he's I think his fifth wife.
Sorry. Yeah.
You can imagine us as a brother. We got on fine, but it was like, hi Sean.
Yeah.
Hi, Al. He is quite a he's a proper
man. He's doer
in
real life.
Yeah. Of our family gatherings, he was the sexiest.
Yes.
Now I'm back to being the sexiest man in the family.
Apart from one of the dogs. Now, all right, where were we doing? We were doing politicians there, weren't we?
Bizarrely. Yes.
So the sixth wonder is women.
And you've sent me a note. It says
women, not in a creepy way, because I'm now single.
No, it really isn't. Yeah. Oh God! Do you know what? I've been gone for two deep issues. It was the thing my daughter was saying to me. She said, my youngest daughter is. She said to me, I just hate men apart from you and Chris. Chris is her boyfriend.
Yes.
And I'm her father, obviously.
Yeah.
I think. No, I am. Yeah. But,
let's not go back into the divorce.
Yeah, that was a long time ago. Yeah. It is funny, actually. I said this in the show, that she calls me Hal and has done since she was like eight. Yeah. And she's the daughter that doesn't look like me.
Yeah.
A little bit creepy.
She probably heard a Paul Simon song and misunderstood it. Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. You have to do the work yourself on that one. Okay, come on.
Call me Hal. Yeah. But she did say that of going, and you do look at it. The more, of course, it's obvious, but we just sort of accept it as a thing that women are just so much better than men in terms of as human beings, as the society we live in. If we blame certain groups for crime and all these things like that, and it's men committing a crime.
Yes.
I mean, a really serious note. This is probably far too sensitive. That little girl that got killed in Liverpool with her mum, and it's gangsters.
Yes.
It's men, and men are hardly... Gangsters are hardly ever women. Men are propagating so much violence and so many terrible things in society. And you do think, if we ever find a way to reproduce without men... Yeah. Women,
well, I think they've discovered it now. I think
camp men should be preserved.
Yes.
But I do think you just look at it.
Would you describe yourself as a camp man? You're a camp man?
I think I'm quite a camp man, aren't I?
Well, sort of. There's a certain.
I didn't realise how camp I was till I left drama. At drama school, I fitted right in.
Yes. Yeah.
but I left drama school. And I started doing bigger stand up. People went, oh, and then I found it because people would be shouting at me. Oh, you're very camp. I remember I used to do a gay club called Barcode, where it was a gay comedy night.
Yeah.
And I used to be introduced as the campest straight man in London. And I used to walk onto a whole room of gay men and women and going, I'm not that camp, and I and the whole room go, yeah, you are. But that whole it just constantly amazes how much we talk about certain issues in society, and the massive issue is men and the toxicity of men and the sort of I'm just making that thing of going, we are so much the problem. I mean, actually, when it comes to divorce, I have that thing about most, even I now usually blame the man.
Yeah.
Even when I don't know the situation, you think, that bastard.
That's a bit unfair.
Isn't that terrible? Yes, there's loads. Yeah. And I said, I'm completely blameless, obviously, and a lovely guy.
Yeah. You're right, though, about men and crime, because my wife was a criminal barrister, and I can't go into this too much because we're on strike at the moment. But as a tiebreaker in a quiz. You know, I often do quizzes, and you have to have a tiebreaker. And one way of doing it is just coming up with a figure that nobody knows. You've got to. So the good way to do it, and you get it on a daily basis, get the prison population. And I say, how many men are in prison at the moment, or today. Yeah. And as a starter, I said, well, I'll give you help. I'll tell you how many women are in prison. So you could get the figure both off the Home Office website. Yeah. And so you tell them a figure, whatever it is. And this will help you if this is ever said. The number of men in prison is 20 times the number of women in prison. And people select do double or three times, four times. They don't know it's 20 times. There are other reasons for why there might not be quite so many women in prison. But that is roughly the difference in crime committing as well.
And it's just, I know it's a really obvious point, but things like, it's not just the damage that men do, it's also the good that we're, caring jobs are dominated by women.
Yes.
All the nicest bits of society, women are, and this, I'm just really, have you got daughters?
I have. I've got two daughters.
Yes, I have two daughters. Yes. And you have a son as well.
I have a son as well.
I see, it's disappointing. Because we've all had daughters.
He's not in prison.
Not yet. But you do, you just go, people do that thing, and particularly people go, oh, daughters are tough. Daughters are no way, there's not the same level of worry. I know people tend to worry more about girls than boys. You should actually be far more worried about boys. Your boy is far more likely to end up in prison,
on drugs,
alcoholic.
Oh, they're all a worry, for goodness sake.
But it's just the nightmare that is men. And it is, I don't know, it's another thing to be ashamed about. So that's, I think women are the wonder, because they just, in general, behave so much better than men. And we should keep hammering away at it whenever we blame any group in society of going, but look at the way women behave. They are so much,
And we've got to keep going, because we're already overrunning. This is the worst bit of overrunning I've done. It's just trying to get you to talk has been so difficult.
No, I do talk. I am terrible.
Your last wonder is mobile phones.
Do you know what? This is the lead. I was hoping you weren't going to get to this one, because I don't know if I've got anything. It's so obvious, this.
Yeah.
I have that thing of, like, my dad died in 1990, and I tend to see my life as going, because my dad died when he was younger than me, of going, what would my dad think about this? And it is just, it's incredible to think that we used to phone up, we used to say we're going to meet somewhere, and we would just have to arrive, wouldn't we? Because there would be no other way of getting hold of someone. Or you know, I've got to stop asking a girl out. You would phone as a teenager, and you'd get their mum.
You'd have
to chat to the mum and go, hi. Yeah.
But that actually was quite a good thing, because it meant the generations had that little bit of communication.
Oh, no, but it was so awkward. You did have nothing to say. And somebody said Edinburgh's so different now, because we're all on our phones we're constantly contactable.
Yeah.
We're constant, and as comics, we're constantly going around going, have I got a review? Have I got a review? And that's our whole, it's destroying our life.
Yes.
But it is amazing. It's going to transform, it's transforming us as human beings. It's the biggest change in our life. That mobile phone, the fact that we can never really escape.
Yes.
The contact. And we don't really want, we know it's bad for us, but we can't leave it alone. And it's, I don't know. I always just think it's the most amazing thing of our lifetime. It's the thing that if my dad came back now, he would just, which would be weird because he'd be younger than me. That would be the biggest thing to blow his mind in our lifetime.
And actually, it links up with worry as well, because I remember one of my daughters did on those, gap year round trips, and then she got into a few scrapes and things, and so she would phone home. And I remember when I did that sort of thing, I was uncontactable by my parents for months on end. And if I managed to get a postcard home to them, they were so impressed.
Yeah.
Or I think I'd made one phone call home, which I had to book by doing something.
Yes.
But now, if your daughter, or it could be your son, doesn't phone you when they've said, oh, I'm a bit of trouble, and then a day goes by, you're terrified.
Totally.
Yeah.
Totally. And I remember being in America before I went to uni, and my mum thought I'd been kidnapped by the Moonies in San Francisco. Do you remember that was the big thing?
Yes,
because I didn't phone her for 3 weeks.
Yeah.
And it is just, it was just unbelievable.
And had you been kidnapped by the Moonies?
No. I just had forgotten to call her. I was just incredibly selfish.
Look, I'm sorry, Hal, we've had to come to an end there. We've gone way beyond time. I'm sorry if I'm keeping you away from other shows. But Hal Cruttendon, thank you for sharing your seven wonders with me. Now I have to choose the wonder of wonders from your list of seven, the one which struck me as particularly wonderful, as you described it on this podcast. So this is an interesting range of things. I didn't think I'd be... Don't want to go with professional rugby players. I don't really like rugby that much. Dogs, I've approved of, but that's cropped up before. I could suck up to my wife with any medical professional, I suppose. Politicians, I don't think get any votes, but I think what it would be quite a sweet thing to do for two old fart men sitting around saying, and put women as your wonder of wonders. So there you go, ladies and Hal Cruttendon.
Thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
If you enjoyed this episode of My Seven Wonders, it would be wonderful if you could rate and review us on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you found us. Thank you for listening.
My Seven Wonders with Clive Anderson is a Stack production in association with Alaska TV and powered by the Acast Creator Network.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.